Holy positive basic space and awareness are equal. Holy positive basic space is aware.
So, many times holy positive basic space is different beings. It could be called pure space. It could be called anything.
Well, you know, that is also a very good question, because to realize aware, holy, positive, basic space, to realize oneself as aware, holy, positive, basic space is a realization. Yet it is a realization that contains what are traditionally known as the five manifest enlightenments. So to just realize holy positive basic space that is entirely aware, in other words, purely aware, is to realize something very sublime. Yet it does not include all of the responsiveness that is naturally present. The natural responsiveness of holy positive basic space is what we could call the five manifest enlightenments. And the way that those are expressed in a human being is that they are expressed as enlightened body, speech, and mind that emanates qualities and exalted activities that are beneficial to the whole. So if you ask if there's another layer, it really isn't a layer, it's just an emanation. When we realize holy positive basic space that is absolutely aware, know that these enlightened qualities and attributes will be evidenced based on that as the foundation. They're already naturally present. They're already accomplished as the reality of who we are. But if we've taken ourselves to be the points of view of the pure view of awareness rather than the pure view of awareness itself, then very often we don't realize enlightened body, speech, and mind, because our entire body, speech, and mind is involved with conventional ways of talking about things, thinking about things, and activities associated with conventional ways of being. So the actions of our body fall into conventional points of view. Our speech falls into conventional speaking based on points of view. And our thinking is absorbed in conventional thoughts based on points of view. It's really a very simple matter. So in the Great Freedom Teaching, we focus solely on that simplicity, that all we can prove about ourselves is that we are aware, that we experience awareness. And based on that fundamental experience of awareness that each and every human being has, we can rest naturally as that awareness, and it will become more and more evident to us that we're not all these conventional points of view, rather were their underlying basis, which is the pure view of awareness. And the more we grow familiar with ourselves as that simple awareness, that bare, naked awareness that's very straightforward and absolute, the more we tap into exalted body, speech, and mind. There are many books written today and teachings given about, and I talked about this a little bit the other day when I talked about the extremes. One day I talked about what enlightenment is, the next day I talked about what enlightenment isn't. And there are many books today written about what enlightenment isn't, although they're called books about enlightenment or awakening. So any teaching that focuses just on this realization of pure awareness alone is not a foundation for exhibiting the full evidence of what we really are. So, you know, why is it important?
Who cares whether we said it this or not?
If human beings have been this throughout human history,
why is it so important right now that we manifest to the world ourselves? Why don't we all
just look to ourselves and look at how we feel
about what's going on in the world? Look at the condition of the world.
Look at how that condition of the world, the planet Earth, for example,
came about. The condition of planet Earth came about through the actions of humankind. So through body, speech, and mind being absorbed in conventional ways of being and doing things from point of view. So then we see in a very simple way that it's important for us as human beings to take this radical stand for ourselves as we really are. And that radical stand says that
we are enlightened and we always have been, and we claim our birthright
to realize that right now. We realize it for ourselves,
which is giving ourselves compassion, care, kindness,
the ultimate compassion, kindness, and care. And then when we realize that for ourselves, we realize more and more how much we can benefit other human beings, how we can benefit our planet. And the solutions come
not from points of view, but from this entirely
open, sublime space that is all known. So it's not just some kind of personal space to hang out, like an island filled with jewels,
where we get everything we want. We may get everything we want and more than we ever imagined, but it's not something that's focused on itself.
One could call it the
exchange of self for other.
Because we start out feeling that we are isolated, individual, alone, separate, and
fragmented in our little body cave.
And we come to realize that we're indivisible. We're indivisible. We're the indivisible fabric of everything. So this is what holopositive basic space is. It's the indivisible reality. The indivisible reality of what we are.
And it's not an abstraction.
It's so what that means is it's vitally alive, spirited. Holy positive not only implies, but it demands
that this emanation of benefit occur.
So this is what traditionally is called complete
what is also called complete enlightenment in the Great Freedom Teaching. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So point of view and awareness are inseparable. We're not trying to eradicate point of view and uphold pure awareness. What we're doing is looking into the true nature of point of view. which is that point of view is awareness only. It's the dynamic energy of awareness. It may be something that's visible or it may be something that's invisible. It can be a conceptual point of view or a non-conceptual point of view. But if we only recognize it as whatever its label is, according to the dictionary, man, woman, boy, girl, black, white, up, down, then we fragment reality into many segments according to their labels. But point of view and awareness are inseparable, just like this cloth and its color. We couldn't extract the color from this cloth and say, okay, here's the pink and here's the cloth. And we, even if we look at ourselves in that way, we can't reduce ourselves to anything other than awareness. It's impossible. If we start to really, if we took our whole body, for example, and said, okay, where am I? Where am I located in this body? And we started to look at everything about our body, and we, you know, we looked at our skin. Well, where am I located in my skin? Well, we wouldn't find the eye there. We wouldn't find consciousness anywhere in the skin. We wouldn't find the notion of being somebody anywhere in our bones. We wouldn't find that anywhere in our muscles or anywhere in our organs or even in our blood or our blood cells or even an organ we consider to be very important like the brain or the heart. We wouldn't find anything about us that makes us somebody there. We wouldn't find our awareness in any of those places. It can't be isolated to anything. And even if we brought in all the experts on physiology, anatomy from all over the world, and everyone was taking a look at our body to see if they could find somebody in there, they'd never find this thing called awareness, because the body, the point of view of a body, is also within awareness. Inseparable from awareness, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. So, you know, we're not going to find awareness within the body, because the body is within awareness. And if we took out an electron microscope and looked at the body in the under the electron microscope, all we'd see are all these particles that look exactly alike. So, but still, would we locate awareness? No, we wouldn't locate it anywhere. And say we found a linear accelerator like the one at Stanford University or maybe somewhere else, and we threw the whole body in there and it was just smashed into subatomic particles that couldn't even be seen under the electron microscope. But we'd only know that they were there because they were heard or whatever it was, or it was a flash of light. We still wouldn't be able to locate awareness or any idea of somebody. All we would be left with is awareness. Aware of the body, aware of all these aspects or characteristics of what a body is. Aware of basic space as nothing, aware of sounds of subatomic particles, aware of light. But what's the commonality in all those observations? The commonality is awareness. So this is what we can prove about ourselves. And the idea that it's the body that's aware is an assumption. But it's not an assumption that we can prove. So it's only an assumption. When we really inquire in just a very simple way and examine an assumption like that, we see that this awareness that we experience so directly, very seldom is it ever aware that we are a body. You know, that's something we hardly ever think about. It's an assumption. It's an assumption that we have, that we are a discrete, finite form. So when we rest naturally as awareness, we see more and more. This enlightened body, speech, and mind comes alive. We see that we've mingled our awareness with the vast expanse. No longer are we operating within this assumption of being a finite form called the body. More and more do we feel our vastness and our non-particularity. And as we rest as that, we grow more and more comfortable with life. So it isn't like we're checking out of life. We find ourselves more and more squarely right in the middle of life, contributing in a powerful way to our own well-being and that of everyone else. So, you know, for any of us who read books about enlightenment or go to meetings like this, we hear these things over and over again, that we have to let go of our belief systems and assumptions, but in order to rest as awareness. And a lot of times we have a difficult time doing that. You know, we may go to these meetings for years, read books about enlightenment for years, and still we have these things that plague us, these points of view that plague us. And there's a very simple cause of that, a very, very simple cause, and that is that as long as there is some kind of general philosophical overlay that is applied to everyone, for example, that states we have to let go of all belief systems and assumptions, it's so entirely vague that it can't possibly support us in resting naturally. It's so entirely vague that there's nothing at all that we can pin down of any particularity that can help us in as individuals in resting as awareness. We have to know what our own points of view are, what our own patterns of points of view are, what our own personal belief systems and assumptions are. And once we look into that with our own keen insight, then it becomes much easier for us to rest naturally when they arise. It's just like, you know, if say you lived in a house and every night there was someone who was breaking into your house and stealing your stuff. And you really didn't want it to happen anymore. Well, you could sit there and not want it to happen anymore, but none of that would work. You'd have to nab the person, you know, one way or another. Take them out of the situation, identify them, take a look at them, and make them stop. Well, this is how it is with each of us. You know, we look at what these points of view are that we've adopted, and when we identify them, and then it's much easier to rest when they come up. If they're blindsiding us all the time, then it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. So, you know, all this comes about through resting naturally in the immediacy of each perception. When we rest naturally in the immediacy of each perception, we learn more about how our points of view operate. We learn a lot more about that. And, you know, it's just like if we picked up a bow and arrow, and we wanted to shoot the arrow afar, we'd have to take an action with the bow and arrow. You know, we'd have to put the arrow in the bow, we'd have to draw the bow back, and we'd have to release it. And so, just as with resting naturally, we have to take that action. We can want to be pure awareness, we can want to be enlightened beings, but unless we take the action of resting naturally in the immediacy of each perception, it'll be very difficult for us to realize that. Or say we were in a rowboat and we wanted to cross the Ganga, and the oars were there, but we were just sitting in the boat. We could want to get across that river for the next 25 years, but we wouldn't be going anywhere unless we picked up the oars and started to row. So, you know, the simple direct action that each of us can take, there's no one who is exempt from this. Anyone can take this action. Resting naturally in the immediacy of perception. It doesn't require any special perception. Just whatever the perception is. Every single perception, no matter what it is the throne of perfect rest. So, you know, there's not any special perception needed, like a calm perception, a sweet perception, a tender perception. When all perceptions are equal, they're all tender. So, you know, this is where we reveal the essence of our own being in a very direct way. Do you have any questions, Michael?
In this, you're talking about the immediacy of perception. In the state of that enlightened state of pure awareness, who makes the decision as to whether to row, how fast to row, where to row, why to row? And is awareness going to make the oneness of awareness going to take the exact same decision in every situation, or is there going to be a different decision possible? And what are the criteria for, you know what I mean? Like, who, it's the question I have of an enlightened state is, why is this enlightened being different from this enlightened being in the state of pure awareness? Or who's taking that decision? And can the decision be different in the state of pure awareness? Is there an individual you're saying, like, to act in the immediacy of that mm-hmm. moment, whatever's required and whatever action is perfect, whether it's calm or quick or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But where does that decision come from?
Self-knowing awareness. That's all.
But if the self is one, how can the outcome be different, or how can the action be different?
It is whatever it is. So, you know, the only way to realize that is for yourself. You know all things through your own omniscience. All your questions about other human beings are answered in you, by you, and answered from your own self-knowing awareness. And that is what is indivisible with everything. The evidence or the dynamic energy of self-knowing awareness in the world is, you know, just whatever it is. All of this is your magnificent display. So the way that you get to know that as Michael is to rest naturally in the immediacy of every perception. And what I suggest is to spend a period of time doing that, just resting naturally in the immediacy of perception. And then more and more one grows comfortable with the action that flows directly from that. And more one can see where the actions from natural rest are greatly different than actions taken from point of view. But, you know, they can be whatever they are, just whatever they are. But the only way we can know that is as an individual person. There's no way to describe what it will be like for you by looking at someone else. So one of the things we suggest in the Great Freedom Teaching is to keep the focus on yourself, just on yourself and your own natural rest. To rest naturally for short moments many times until it becomes automatic, rather than trying to contrive a state of natural rest that you need to hang on to. When there's rest for short moments repeated many times, then it's guaranteed that it's uncontrived. Whereas if we try to hold on to a special state, then it's going to devolve into point of view, some kind of point of view of what's going on. So freedom in immediate perception enlivens that vivid wakefulness that's already present as our true being. Something more about that? Go ahead. That's what this is for. To ask all your questions.
Is awareness, the state of awareness, in your, what you're saying, active or passive, or both, or what? What is it? Is awareness that it simply is? You call that beingness, or your state of beingness? Your pure totality of beingness, I guess.
It could be called that.
Is that a passive state of witness, and what is it then that acts? You know, the question I've had so much is the process of decision making, mm-hmm. in the moment, when you can be aware of self, you might have that glimpse of that thoughtless, pure awareness of self, of everything. Who or what makes the decision that's required in that moment as life demands it? Whether to row the boat on the hill, you know, whether to take that packet of cereal or that packet of cereal from the supermarket shop. Is awareness in the pure, undifferentiated realm, is the decision spontaneous, and it will be the same decision for all enlightened beings? If you attain to that state, it's the decision making process I've always been interested in that moment. Who or what makes the decision, and how, if you've attained to that state, why wouldn't it be exactly the same decision, or is it just infinite variety of possibilities and nothing really matters in the end?
Rest naturally without describing anything, that's what I suggest. Rest naturally without describing anything, and all these questions will be answered. You'll answer them for yourself from your own all-knowing being. Right now, you're engaging in logical speculation about something. pure awareness that is beyond speculation, that is in fact absent of speculation about whether it is this or it is that, about whether it is or it isn't, about whether it's passive or active, about whether it's samsara or nirvana, or inclusive of both samsara and nirvana. Do you see what I mean? So the true reality of your grounded being is absent of speculation or characteristics. It doesn't speculate about whether it's free or not, or confused or not, or a doer or not, or needing to make a decision or not. So the only way to get to know that pure awareness is to rest in the immediacy of perception. And then more and more all those questions are answered. But they're not answered from logical speculation. We can only understand so much about our own beingness through a mental understanding. At some point, we all have to bring everything to a complete stop and rest.
Does that mean we get out of our head? People who live in their head and are always trying to figure things out, means you just let go and rest.
Just let go and rest. And realize that you have no head. Begin with the end of the head. We assume so many things based upon points of view we've adopted from others. We assume that we have a head and it has a mind in it, and this mind is running the show. You know, this mind, it's filled with all kinds of emotions, it's filled with all kinds of thoughts, it's the interpreter of all these sensations we're having in our body. It makes our body act in all kinds of ways. A lot of times it makes our body act in ways we don't want to act. So, you know, all of these are assumptions that aren't even our own assumptions. We didn't come up with these ideas. We borrowed them from other people who told us about them. So they're not even our own points of view. They're points of view we've adopted from other people. Things like we have a memory, our identity is defined by memory. The way we behave now is based upon all our accumulated memories, all our accumulated thoughts. All these are assumptions. So if we just bring everything to a stop and we say simply, I rely on the experience of my own awareness. I experience awareness. That's what I can prove about myself beyond what anyone has ever said to me about myself. And within that awareness is included all my perceptions, no matter what they are. Then all perceptions are equal. The perception that there is a mind is equal to the perception that there is no mind. So, you know, that's why I say begin with the end of mind. All we know about ourselves is that we are aware. That awareness we can prove about ourselves. If we take it a step further and we say, okay, my awareness is entirely pure. It's originally pure from the beginningless beginning. And we consider all of this dynamic energy of awareness. The dynamic energy of awareness is something only because it's named and labeled. But all those names and labels, those too are awareness. All the names and labels, no matter how many hundreds of thousands there might be, they're all comprised of the same 26 letters of the alphabet, or if you speak another language, whatever characters those are. So just visualize your awareness with all those characters or letters of the alphabet. You can arrange them in any way you want, but it's still all your own awareness. It doesn't make any of those arrangements of awareness, so to speak, into a finite entity that can get you. Like a mind. There's only the notion of a mind that's been fashioned out of awareness. But still, the essence is awareness. So why not rely on what's constant in that perception? Awareness. Just the awareness, the simple awareness. The only way we can get to know that is rest. Just rest, no matter what the perception is that's coming up. And the richest perceptions for rest are the ones that are the most difficult. The richest perceptions for us to reveal more of ourselves as awareness are the ones that are the most difficult. So the ones where we really get caught up in our points of view. And we each have those, whatever they are. Maybe we like to get angry, or maybe we're lustful, or maybe we're jealous, or maybe we don't like to be criticized, or whatever it is. When those come up and we really feel our buttons push to just rest while those are arising, to find our natural rest in that perception is very powerful. Pardon? Awareness knows itself. That's what self-knowing awareness is. It's just like if I turn on this lamp here up on the wall at night, it not only illuminates the room, it illuminates itself. So there is no mind. There is no individual mind. There is awareness. There is awareness as the basis of what might be assumed to be an individual mind.
So what happens if you took the brain down?
Would that affect awareness?
Well, I don't know.
Awareness is unmediated by the body. The only function of the body is self-knowing awareness. The human being is the only being that has self-knowing awareness. It's the only way awareness knows itself, through the human form. But the constant in everything about the body is awareness. There's no other constant. There's nothing that exists outside awareness.
Why do we need the body to know that? Why do we need the body to know that?
Rest naturally and you'll know. Rest naturally and you'll know more and more about that. So many of the questions just cannot be answered through trying to examine them based on point of view. But the more we rest naturally, the more we realize we are nothing but this holy, positive, basic space that warms everything, that is the essence of everything, the more all these questions are answered. The more we realize that everything, no matter what it is our own wonderment, our own magical display. But we can't ever describe any of that through any kind of process of logical inquiry. It only comes about through natural rest.
So in my early stage here, we forget about the brain, the mind, everything, and it just sort of reduces down. Now, in my mind, I'm now reduced down to a frog, except for there is no frog. That's the essence of what you're saying. Does that make sense?
Awareness?
Yes. There's no brain, no mind, no body. And so it's sort of kind of lumped down to like a frog. But now I see there's no frog either.
There's no frog either, that's right.
It's just essence.
It's just the essence, right? And that essence is aware. Yeah.
or is it just happening? Because it seems just...
It's happening.
Yeah. Is that why I seem like a baby here?
Sure, you know, it's just it doesn't need to be any specific way, but one way it can be guaranteed if it's very difficult for you to get a sense of yourself as awareness, to rest naturally will give you that sense. But it doesn't mean that everyone has to rest naturally. For others, it may just evidence itself as an ease, an increasing ease, with no need to rest. Because rest is always so. That's our natural state. It's absolutely obvious at all times. If we tend to be too actively involved in all of our points of view, through resting in the immediacy of perception, all that comes to a stop. We don't have to rely on anything about ourselves other than that rest. It's absolutely guaranteed. There's a story that I sometimes tell about a Tibetan monk who was imprisoned in China for 20 years. And every day he was beaten, and he was also in solitary confinement for that entire time. And when he got out, the Dalai Lama asked him what the most difficult thing was that he faced, what his greatest danger was when he was in prison. And he said, losing compassion for the Chinese. So, you know, that can only come from natural rest. That's not something that can be logically arrived at. One cannot arrive at or cultivate or develop something based on points of view called compassion. It can only come about through the natural rest whereby one gives oneself compassion through natural rest. And what naturally emanates then from that compassion arrived at through one's own direct experience is compassion for all beings as oneself. So, you know, this is a very powerful story. It's a very powerful story in many ways. One of its most powerful aspects is the monk, just like us, is a human being too. So it shows us that, just like the monk, we're human beings, and no matter what point of view we're faced with, we have a choice to rest or not. We have a choice to be completely at ease. And sometimes a story like that can help us because it's unlikely that any of us will ever face anything that extreme. So we know that if the monk can face something that extreme, that whatever it is that's coming up for us, we can face that too. When we rest in the immediacy of perception, we're prepared for any situation that might come up. Michael?
Going over old ground here, so why do we forget, and why do we need to be told again? You know, why do we forget, or you know, why aren't we resting in that state? Why do we forget that, and why do we need to be told of it again?
Good question. We keep it very simple here. We already are naturally at rest. Everyone's already naturally at rest. If we don't feel at rest, it's because we choose not to. It's as simple as that. It's our self-knowing awareness is completely free in every perception to do whatever it will. To get totally involved in the perception and run it out as a big story, or to rest naturally. So this is the choice, our choice from the beginning of our life.
Who chooses?
Self-knowing awareness is the only one that chooses.
So it chooses the suffering. It chooses the identification with suffering, as well as the pain, as well as the pleasure.
Exactly.
For the sake of experience, or learning, or whatever it may be.
There's either recognition of awareness or non-recognition of awareness. That's all. And non-recognition of awareness comes about only through forgetting and thinking. That's it. So, you know, there can be endless philosophical speculations about this matter. However, if it's brought all down to your own responsibility, the responsibility of your own awareness for freedom and the immediacy of every perception, that brings a complete end to philosophical speculation. The philosophical speculation of any book that might be read, the philosophical speculation of anything that might be read on the internet, even your own philosophical speculation, it brings it all to an end, because the only freedom there is this freedom in the immediacy of perception. No one can give it to you, no one can take it away from you. But if you're really interested in that freedom and totally committed to it, then everything that is opens up to support you in that. Yeah.
It just appears something to me that something needs to, it's almost like a muscle that needs exercising. The ability to remember, or the desire to remember, it starts as a seed and it grows, but for me, personally, I don't speak from my experience, it's something that's needed to be cultivated and practiced, like a muscle develops with practice, that the ability to remember more and more, to try and rest in that state, didn't seem to be something that came naturally. Well, it's not 24/7. It seems to need a bit of, for me, needs. You need to try. You need to make efforts to remember, to rest.
Some people do, and some don't. But this is what we can count on, and again, this is very straightforward. If we live a life based on point of view, and we take all the actions that support that, in other words, we hang around with other people who are living from point of view, we read books that are based on point of view, we watch television and movies based on point of view. If we involve ourselves in that kind of community of point of view, it's much more likely that we're not going to rest as awareness, because we're not getting support for resting as awareness. So when we want to rest naturally, it's important to place ourselves in an environment where that's more likely to occur. In the Great Freedom Teaching, we call that the Four Comforts. The teacher, the teaching, the community, and resting naturally. All that is available to support us. And then it's easier. It's much easier than doing it on our own. Sometimes we might not even have to make the decision to rest. There are quite a few people who come to the Great Freedom Teaching just by being here. They're at rest. That's it. You know, without taking the action to rest naturally. For others, the natural rest helps them settle into the reality of who they are. But just like with anything, if you want to build your biceps, you go to Gold's Gym or whatever the gym is, and you do whatever you need to do to pump up those biceps. But, you know, if you stop going to Gold's Gym, the biceps dwindle. And if you stop using your arms altogether, well, they atrophy. So with resting naturally, it isn't like that. It's permanent. It's not like trying to work a muscle of point of view. The more we rest, the more we stabilize ourselves in that rest. The more we integrate all of our perceptions as natural rest, the more freedom we have. But if we have a perception that comes up that is one of our pet points of view, and it could be intellectual speculation, you know? It could be intellectual speculation about enlightenment. Then if we dive in there and we indulge that, we've given away our opportunity to rest. So, you know, to bring everything to rest is very powerful. You know, if we're let me just share some of my own experience with you to make it a little more tangible. And when I was a young woman, I was very success-oriented. And I had adopted many, many points of view about my identity. One, you know, I needed to look a certain way, I needed to behave a certain way, I needed to do certain things in life, I needed to go to certain schools, I needed to have a certain number of children, marry the right guy, have a certain amount of money, belong to the right clubs, buy a house, buy a car, you know, all this. So, you know, I was out there. I was going gangbusters. I was going for it all. And, you know, I nailed it all down. By the time I was 28 years old, I was named one of the outstanding young women in America. But did any of that make me feel free or satisfied or fulfilled? No. I felt worse. The more I tried to conquer everything, the worse I felt. So I had built this edifice of point of view and called it my identity, but then the whole edifice came crashing down. You know, none of it provided me a foundation. The foundation, there was no foundation. It wasn't even sand, it was quicksand. You know, it was all sucking the edifice into itself. And no matter what strategy I tried, nothing worked. Psychology, philosophy, my vast intellect, alcohol and drugs, you know, no matter where I went, there wasn't anything that could put a band-aid on this woundedness that I felt. So what I was left with was this incredible turmoil of thoughts, intellectual speculation about the meaning of life, about my very dismal looking future, and intense emotional pain. Intense emotional pain of the variety of complete bewilderment, hopelessness, terror, and despair. So with all of that just swirling around, I had no hope. You know, I couldn't find a way out of it. There was no strategy of self that I could put together to find a way out of that. Nothing I could do. And when I realized that, very soon thereafter, I realized that even though there was this entire conundrum of all this energy going on that was so intensely painful, that seemed so entirely overwhelming, that seemed so entirely beyond my capacity to get a handle on it, I realized that every single one of those things, no matter what they were, had an underlying basis, and that underlying basis was complete relief. I didn't even know what to call it. Awareness, whatever. And I wasn't going for anything, you know, like enlightenment or awakening or pure awareness. I didn't even know about any of that. So, you know, when all of this turmoil would come up, I would just rest as that underlying basis. When all my speculations about the meaning of life, my dismal future, the past that had brought me to nowhere, the present that was so excruciatingly painful I couldn't bear it as a human being, when all of that came up, no matter what it was, I would rest. I would rest, I would rest, I would rest, I would rest. And the more I rested, the more the splendor of this relief revealed itself. So I know this works. You know, I'm not a philosopher. I'm here to share my own experience, strength, and realization. What has worked very profoundly in my own life and also worked for many people I've been involved with over the last 24 years. So as you can imagine, in 24 years I've seen about everything. You know, I've seen it in myself and the display manifests in all kinds of ways. But who we are is so sweetly simple. It's just so sweetly simple. And if we can give ourselves this direct experience of rest, just that, no matter what comes up, we always find the same thing as its basis. We all have our equivalent of the monk in the Chinese prison. We do. It's the prison of our own perceptions, whatever they might be. And the interesting thing about that prison is that it never was. So, you know, there's always freedom in that prison.
And this, you know, your turmoil you experience, were you wrestling in that experience, or is it behind the experience?
It's the essence of all experience. So when I say resting as the underlying basis, I don't mean as the underlying basis is something other than the perception. It was a very keen realization that the only freedom is in the immediacy of that perception, that the underlying basis of that perception is completely free. Any description of it makes it into something else or not.
That would be a good example of what you said about using something very extreme as the basis of your rest.
Exactly. Sometimes very extreme situations reveal everything, as they did in my case, you know. So, as I mentioned yesterday, all of these impulses we have, no matter what we are, the impulse of every thought, feeling, sensation, action is freedom. That's the impulse of every single thought, action, sensation, emotion. Its impulse always is freedom, because that's all that it is. Ah. Most of us, when we sleep at night, have dreams of some kind. And in the dream, we might see ourselves moving around, doing all kinds of things. And we're hearing things in the dream, we're seeing things. And so, you know, just as all of those images are included within the state of sleep, within the state of the dream. So all perceptions, no matter what they are, included within awareness. And in the dream, you know, who sees? Who hears? What sees and what hears in a dream? Are there dream eyes seeing in the dream figure? Are there dream ears hearing? It's all awareness. All awareness. Who are the parents of all the images in a dream? Who are the mothers and fathers of all the personalities running around in a dream? So, you get where I'm going with that. So, you know, when we get to know ourselves in this way, it's a source of incredible wonderment that we ever took ourselves to be anything other than that. Questions, songs you'd like to sing, dances you'd like to do, poems you'd like to recite. We'll sit quietly for a few minutes then before we come to a close.